720 WGN on the road with Dane here on Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Glad to be back. We were preempted last week for the Bears Draft Showcase. Joey, were you in on the Bears Draft Showcase?
I was not invited to the fancy draft party here at WGN. But
when it comes to the station and personalities and people involved with it, you are one of the, I think, the staunchest Bears fans, longtime tailgater.
This is true.
Think that you should have been in on that because just according to the theme, and granted, you know, Hamp and OB, traditionally, they're kind of dark clouds. You know, they sometimes come off first as pessimistic. And maybe the tailgating will be the best part of the Bears season coming up.
It just might be.
Well, what was your thought on the Trubisky thing?
It was interesting, to say the least. I mean, it was the idea of, you knew they were going to make a big move at the number three pick, but you didn't think they'd, one, trade it for what they did, and two, take a quarterback that nobody thought they were going to take. I have to give them credit for keeping it secret for so long.
But sometimes, you know, in life, you keep things secret because people won't be happy with it, right? Because you
gotta
think.
He got booed at the United Center when he came to town the next day. I mean,
and apparently they didn't tell Glennon, who's, of course, the free agent that they had just signed, who thought he was going to have an exciting first track with the Bears. And then they didn't even tell John Fox, apparently, right? You think your coach would be in on, like, here's your quarterback.
Right, the pressure's on now. They said Glennon felt cheated on. So we'll see how it works,
Well, we won't revisit any of that negativity here. And we are months away from the first Bears loss coming up in early September. So here we have On the Road with Dane. We're going to touch on some of those things, the world of racing, travel, road trips, family, fun, tailgating, all that kind of stuff, plus those bucket list situations where you get in the car, you get out there, and you experience some of those things for the first time, maybe the only time as well. So on the show today, in the world of NASCAR, Dale Earnhardt Jr. Had announced his retirement, and Jay Gerst is a guy that I've known for a long time. He is his historian. He wrote books with him, about him together. He was his manager the entire time he was racing in the Bud car. He'll be joining us a little bit later on in the program. Will Power, now that's a name for you, Pete. Now we have Panini Pete in studio as well, a famed, acclaimed chef, world traveler.
All right.
He's going to be talking about formative travel, helping out the troops with the mess lords, and of course, getting out on the road. Now, Panini Pete, you have a name, but you chose that name. I mean, that was kind of or maybe it was given to you based on the fact that you consistently developed and handed out, you know, top-notch paninis.
When you're rocking the paninis, it just kind of happens, and the restaurant evolved, and it became more than just the name on the door, and now I'm kind of stuck with it.
You're kind of stuck with it. So, but we're going to have, the reason I'm getting to this is IndyCar driver Will Power is joining us, and that is actually, I guess, his name. I mean,
that's a name.
Daniel, okay, Joey Gelman, all right. Panini Pete, that's cool because, you know, it's based on your performance. But Will Power, that's good. He's going to be joining us a little bit later on in the program to talk about the Indy 500. And then Joe Mantegna is going to be talking first cars with us. We'll be doing some Kentucky Derby stuff. Chef Aaron May is going to be calling in
from the
Kentucky Derby a little bit later on in the program. And Wes Henderson, do you enjoy bourbon now and then, Pete?
Oh, boy, do I love me some bourbon.
Well, Angel's Envy is a bourbon that is out there that is highly acclaimed.
Fantastic.
And so Wes is the creator, the co-founder of Angel's Envy. He'll be joining us from Louisville as well. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Panini Pete about some of the travels that he's done. And, you know, we take it for granted. We're here in Chicago. We consistently talk about getting out, getting away from here, getting to other places. We don't have the best weather, but Pete is in town, and your wife is in town for the first time ever. I know you've traveled.
Awesome.
And been here for, so it'll be like just the perspective on Chicago from an outsider's. And then Pete consistently travels the world for the mess lord. So we'll talk about some of those great journeys and adventures that he has had. You can add to the program 312-981-7200, your text, your calls, your road trips. You've got a Kentucky Derby experience. Joey's going to print out the names of the horses. You can go ahead and add in those, your pick for today's winner, and you'll be entered to win those Indy 500 tickets. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hey, this is Guy Goody from Diners, Drivers, and Dives, and you are on the road with Dane on WGN. Put your seatbelt on. We're on the road.
And we are back, 720 WGN, on the road with Dane here, Showcase Studio, Michigan Avenue. And joining me in studio is a guy that has been all over the world, and I mean that literally, in support of our servicemen, and of course in just like the nonstop search for adventure, and that adventure takes him, and sometimes we take Chicago for granted. We don't have the best weather for sure, and You know, there are things that maybe could be better, but Chicago is becoming, and well, it always has been a great destination, but it's becoming. I talked with the mayor on the red carpet over at the James Beard Awards just the other day, and he was just really pushing that Chicago is a tourist destination. It's a destination not only on the food side, right?
Unbelievable.
You know, got a great food scene, but the architecture, the sports, you know, it's just that kind of place that people come to. We kind of take it for granted, but in studio is a longtime good friend and acclaimed chef, the one and only Panini Pete is in.
Woo-hoo.
From Alabama, but you've got some great Illinois and Chicago ties as well.
Unbelievable. To be here this weekend is great. My wife and I came up to surprise a buddy for his birthday. Robert Kabakoff, went to school with him up at the CIA.
Big shout out to the Kabakoffs.
Big shout out to the Kabakoffs. And we do a 5K race up there, the scholarship run that we co-chair. And
for the CIA, because we did mention
Culinary
in the
Institute of America.
Yes, right. Because we mentioned in the,
other,
you know, the men and women in
not
uniform.
That CIA.
Right. I was going to ask you about the Russian connection, but I know you couldn't tell me.
I was lucky to get into the cooking CIA, man. I still almost didn't pass. But love to see. I was actually born up here. A lot of people don't know. Lived in Chicago till I was 7. Great history. I ran in a 5K this morning, the run for to remember the fallen police officers. And it was amazing. My grandfather was a police officer here for almost 40 years. He joined the force in the early 20s.
Wow.
And that was on my dad's side.
I did not know that.
Unbelievable, right? And then he was head of security for Montgomery Ward. My grandfather, my mom's side, was a jazz pianist. So he played here all through the 40s, 50s, 60s, and, you know, State Street and all over. And my grandmother was a school teacher up here. You know, my parents both grew up here. Love it, love it, love it. So when I come back, you know, I'm like, this is so awesome. But I kind of feel like, well, it's my town, but it's just, it's amazing. You know, don't take it for granted. It's beautiful. The architecture, the shows, everything.
We do, but it's nice to have somebody come in. And as much as you are, you know, this is your home away from home. When you talk about that history with the family, you know, not only on the artistic side with the piano, but the, you know, the police and the schools. And I mean, you're as much a Chicagoan as a lot of people who maybe haven't had that history here. But personally, you spent a lot of time, you know, out all over the place in the South and Alabama. So it is nice to hear, you know, when you get into town and you do some things here. I was surprised that your wife, who is with Jody, right? She came with that. She has never been here. You think just as you, unless she's not one of those. You know, some people just include if they've been to the airport or not.
Yeah, like I can do that for Hawaii. I was in the airport.
Okay, some people do that, but so she's not necessarily doing that. But I'm surprised. So it's really cool for you, you know, with the history that you have, and then to have her. And you guys are in a position in life where you can get out there and kind of enjoy things. You know, you get to pick and choose.
Absolutely.
And so what has been her reaction?
Oh, it's been crazy because, you know, she's a school teacher as well. So I get on the road a ton, and I rarely can take her. So, and the mess lord stuff is all, I don't want to say top secret, but we're traveling with and for the military, so she doesn't get to go on those. And to sneak her out for this trip, it was so funny because she's a runner, so I said, hey, we're going to go surprise Robert and Katie on the birthday in Chicago, and you need to see the city, the food, the architecture. It'll be so amazing. And they're running a 5K. Oh, okay, I'm in. And she has just been freaking out. We got here, walked by the studio yesterday, and just walked down the whole Miracle Mile and just all the museum. The architecture alone and the sculptures is just, it's breathtaking, breathtaking. Don't take it for granted. Open your eyes, walk around, check it out, man. It's beautiful down here.
Sometimes we're in a little bit of a bubble here, and, you know, and the news focuses on one thing or another. We know it's great food town, great sports town, the architecture, you know, certainly the history. And we, you know, we've got the Chicago Fire, right?
Yeah,
you had the cow and it burned down the city. But from the outside viewpoint, sometimes we think Chicago gets a bad rap. Certainly there are challenges here, as there are in any big city. But what is the perception? You know, in let's say Fairhope, Alabama, where you are, do they see, you know, because you always think of that there's kind of that typical contention between the South and the North, kind of stuff. I mean, how do they perceive Chicago?
I think Chicago has a great reputation. It's really, people appreciate it because it's big enough to be just awe-inspiring, but small enough to be, I guess, managed well and appreciated. And it's just got a great story, a great vibe. People are nice here. You know, for the most part, it's very friendly, that Midwestern value. So living so long as I have in the South, it's very refreshing.
We talk about travel as those kind of transformative experiences. It's the greatest way to get that perspective on the human condition. We talk to people, you know, friends, probably mutual friends like Andrew Zimmern. The thing that you get when you do all of that travel is you realize 100% that we all, regardless of what differences we may have, we all have so much more in common than we could ever have as far as differences that could kind of drive us apart. And I've been a supporter back when it was the America's Chefs.
Right.
Back when you guys, before you were just All American, before you kind of went rogue and became the Mess Lords. And it is and for the listeners, you know what it is it's a group of chefs that donate their time, and these are TV chefs that have been to some level of notoriety here or there and acclaimed and on television. And what they do is they get together for the purpose of getting out and supporting the men and women in uniform. They don't necessarily just hold a fundraiser, you know, in their own hometowns. You actually walk the walk, and you get, you know, on a helicopter and a jeep and a boat and a submarine, and you get out there and you kind of spend time with them. So give a little bit of that background, kind of that snapshot about what the Mess Lords is.
Yeah, the really cool thing with what we do is Navy Entertainment brings us out, or you know, there's Navy MWR, the Morale Welfare Recreation piece. And they're very, very focused on just boosting morale, especially to our troops that are deployed overseas and stationed over there. So we're kind of like the Bob Hopes of the kitchen. We come out there to entertain them. We, you know, it's a bunch of crazy characters. You know, it's all big personalities, big food. But we don't just put on a show and play for an hour like Toby Keith or something and say, thank you, good night, God bless America. We're in the galleys.
I knew Toby
all
Keith
day.
Was doing something wrong. So,
oh, I met Trace Atkins on one of these, and fabulous. These guys are great. But they do their gig, and we are so... just intertwined. We're there all day. We're working in the galley. Even if we have a prep day, we may be just out on the chat line slinging beans and hash and just having fun and thanking them for all they do and feeding them and talking about football, talking about home. And we'll go, if we go out after the gig at the base and, you know, buy them a couple of beverages, some cold beers, whatever. I mean, we really have a good time and work our butts off. John Connolly and I were in Romania a couple years ago, and we did almost a 30-hour stretch without sleeping.
Wow.
And we were at a remote base. But we know that these guys, these men and women aren't going home, you know, anytime soon. They're not going to the movies on Saturday. They're working, 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 working. It's crazy.
Well, you know, the State Department Chef Corps, where the government has kind of embraced that idea that there is that culinary olive branch that can be done. You can really affect a big change and really support the situations and the individuals involved through food. And so for you, you know, getting out there and getting to travel, now you're not there at the five-star resorts, as a person who thinks that it's super interesting and exciting, you're getting to do some stuff people just don't get to do. I mean, you're on aircraft carriers, in submarines, but talk about some of the places that you've been. They're not all vacation. They're not all. Sometimes, you know, if you're in Spain, I'm thinking, okay, you know, but it isn't all, you know, Afghanistan and things like that, but Japan, Djibouti, Bahrain, you mentioned Romania, Cuba. You've been down to Cuba?
Down to Gitmo. You know,
so what was that like?
Experience Cuba. We were at Guantanamo Bay, and specifically when you can't go anywhere but Guantanamo Bay. So it's kind of a beautiful little area, the flora and the fauna, so to speak. But there's big banana rats and iguanas, and they're on lockdown there. They can't leave the bay. So it seems like it might be a great place to be, but it's really not. You can fish a little bit and dive a little bit, but that can get old when you realize you can't go anywhere off that little square few miles of the base. You can't have family down there. So these guys they have tremendous sacrifices that they do for us, that it's so humble for us to go give them a little pizza, some barbecue, some burgers, you know, some paninis and the fish tacos, and they appreciate it so much, and they're so grateful.
We've done stories over the years, you know, on Veterans Day or Memorial Day, you know, it's on the food side, you know, like the MREs and that kind of stuff that you get to eat. And I know it's technically healthy, but it's not necessarily the thing that you would look to eat.
are you reading technically?
Well, I mean, it says it on the package.
Oh,
right?
That's right.
All right. But so when you're there, you know, I'm sure they're engaging you in, you know, for some stories from home, because they all come from different parts and some of them are in common. Certainly America is in common, but also maybe some of those different foods or dishes that they really appreciated that you guys are familiar with and can bring them that they probably don't get on the aircraft carrier.
We're going to Italy next week. I'll be flying out there with Stretch, and we're going to do a big barbecue. I mean, we're going to roast pork butts. We're going to do cornbread. We're going to do beans and slaw. We did Southwest. We did Mexican food, you know, kind of Southwest Tex-Mex when we were in Romania. We'll do a lot of different things because some of the areas they're at, it's very bland food or just very different. You know, even a great hand patty cheeseburger with bacon, and they just go nuts. And we have to work within the ingredients they either have or we can get access to through approved vendors. So it's very tricky. And like restaurants, you know, you don't know what equipment's working, what's not working, what's there, what kind of help we have. Sometimes we have a host of culinary specialists. Sometimes we're on our own. So it's always an adventure.
So as much as you bring to them, and it is huge, it's the reason that you do it, is to support them, but you can't help. And I've seen on social media, you're pretty prolific with that, is that you get out and about in some of these different places. And as a person who is an adventurer, You know, what are some of the things that you've experienced that you can share with the listeners that maybe they wouldn't necessarily, maybe they wouldn't necessarily know about, or something that you'd say like, here's a place you got to try this, or something that you were surprised about?
I tell you, in Japan, obviously, sashimi sushi, the fish markets, the ramen noodles.
I saw some of the things at some of those markets, and you're just like, what is going on?
Just eyeballs, just like a bag of eyeballs. Come and get them, you know. And
because you got to go probably, you know, far out into the suburbs here to get a bag of eyeballs. You just
you're not available. You know, Louie down on, you know, Wabash over there.
Yeah, he's an eyeball salesman. Yep.
But we get, you know, we don't get a lot of time off, but Navy Entertainment will do a really good job of saying if you got a day or a half a day, they're going to take us somewhere cool. We went to a farm in Spain where they were raising goats and making goat cheese and raising Iberian pork. And the guy that ran it was this farrier. He was in Birds of Prey, so we had these big owls on our, you know, shoulders and all these things, and it's just crazy what's out there.
I've seen some of the social media and some of the experiences. I also seen some of the things, because you guys travel around America too. We can list off these exotic locations. I remember Stretch. I was doing an interview with Stretch one time, and he was talking about how you guys just happened into it like a furry convention.
Oh, Lord, in Atlanta. He talked about the FurCon, huh? Had no idea what was happening. And we pull up, and there's a guy in this goat suit that was so just badass. It was like, what is it, like Cirque du Soleil in town? Like Disney. It was really cool. And we're taking pictures and posing. And
did you think he was a mascot for a local sports team?
Yeah, or something. Really cool. And then we start noticing other people with, like, mittens and tails and ears. And we're up in the bar, and there's this big dude, looked like a Tom and Jerry cat mascot. And Stretch is putting his hat on. He had ears and earrings and tattoos. And he's said, what's going on? He goes, oh, it's the best FurCon ever. And we and we're like, okay. And what's going on with the FurCon? And I mean, Stretch and Gorilla, you know, they full on and crashed one of the raves one night, and it was quite an experience. And you never know what you're going to run into out there, folks.
That's where
the travels are meant to be experienced.
The disclaimer is right. It isn't, you know, not suitable for all audiences as far as some of the experiences. But one thing that you're doing is you are developing the beignets, right? Are suitable for everybody. Tyler Florence, our mutual guy, absolutely loves them. He raves about them all the time. But talk about some of the stuff, because you've kind of developed, just like Stretch has in Kansas City. If you get down to Kansas City, check out all the things that he is doing. But down in Florida, up in the Panhandle and Alabama, you have really been bringing it. People love what it is that you're doing. You've got other things on campuses in, like, Virginia.
West Virginia, about
the Panini Empire.
W. We're growing the Panini Pete's brand. We opened in Destin in the Panhandle of Florida. We did a couple licensing deals up at WVU. The campus up there, Go Mountaineers, they are just crushing it, loving the beignets, the paninis. It's been really, really cool. I have a great seafood place on the bay down there, too, called Sunset Point. You know, I'm doing a podcast now, HOTP podcast, the Hot Off the Press, and working on a cookbook. So in between all these travels, you know, we do a lot on the road. Coming up here to Chicago was just fantastic. And you know, one of the things I mentioned, too, you know, I cooked on the USS Chicago at a fast attack sub in Guam. And you guys need to be proud, because they are the heaviest supported subclass out there. And every time they go out at sea for any length of time, when they come back to port, there are representatives from your city with pizza and hot dogs to welcome them back.
Just
to sustain them.
Now, are the crew members, and we're going to go to break in just a second, but are the crew members, do they have to be from Chicago?
No. They're just in the Navy, and they get assigned, you know, to work on this sub. And within the decks and within the walls, there was so much memorabilia from all the sports teams, the White Sox, the Cubbies, the Blackhawks, the Bears, everything, the Bulls. And they didn't have a Bear jersey in there. And, you know, being in Alabama, we host the Senior Bowl every year in Mobile. So I knew this guy, Marty Barrett, was one of the big scouts for the Bears. I think he's with the Phillies now. But I called him and I said, you need a damn jersey down here on this sub ASAP. And they sent a signed Urlacher jersey, like, within a week.
Nice.
They went right onto the sub. USS Chicago.
Not only supporting the troops, but supporting Chicago and the teams, especially
baby,
when they need it. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get Pete's information, social media, ways to catch up with Panini in all his forms. It's staying here on 720 WGN. And we are back, 720 WGN, on the road with Dane and Panini Pete in studio. Pete, before we send it to news, give the website, social media, where people can catch up with all of your exciting and extensive adventures.
Get out there and check us out, Panini Pete. And I'm Panini Pete on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Also, the HOTP podcast comes out, you know, when I get one done, which is awesome. Follow us on there, our website, paninipetes.com, sunsetpointfairhope.com, and just Mess Lords as well on Facebook. Come and like our page, please.
Hi, this is author Jade Gerst, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN Radio.
720 WGN is on the road with Dane here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. On the line with us, we've got best-selling author with acclaimed books written with and about Dale Earnhardt Jr. You've got In Red and, of course, Driver Number 8. More recently with Beast, that has the Indy 500, which is just around the corner, as a backdrop. The one and only Jade Gerst, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. Great to be here.
Now, Jade, I remember communicating back and forth with you, and this had to be back in maybe 2002 or so, and you had written, Driver Number 8 was out. And, I mean, it was such kind of a pivotal time, not only in, of course, Dale Jr.'s career, but just in racing in general, as we kind of came off the tragedy of losing Dale Earnhardt Sr. and all those things that went along with that. When this completely different and very bright and happy circumstances, as Dale thinks about kind of moving on to the next chapter and whatever it is that he has for his life. And when we thought we need to talk to somebody who has a little, a unique perspective on it, not necessarily just what it means to the sport to lose the most popular driver and whatever the TV ratings may suffer, and certainly on the merchandising side, but that individual. And so you got a chance to sit down and write those books with Dale as he was just getting going on his NASCAR career. So when you personally heard that he was going to hang it up, what were your thoughts? Was it one of those where you were like, okay, that's great, that's wonderful for him? Or were you like a little melancholy because maybe he hasn't achieved all that you or he had hoped he would? What were your thoughts?
They were very mixed. On one side, I'm very happy for him. I think he's really, really found a good place in his life. He just got married New Year's Eve, and I think he's in a very, very good place within his overall life and his personal life. So on that aspect, I'm incredibly happy. There are mixed feelings to see him retire. It makes me feel old. but I understand, if you're a diehard race fan or a diehard Dale Jr. fan, it's probably very sad to know that he won't be out there full time after this season. So it was all of that for me to get the news yesterday morning.
I got to mention to you too, and to the listeners as well, is that in our den, I see Driver Number 8 every time I'm in that room. There is a signed copy from you and Dale Jr. up in on one of the shelves in there. And so, having done that and so much close proximity writing those books early on with him, and then you see how he carried himself throughout his career, what were some of the things that come to mind as far as, it was a lot of pressure, right? Did he handle it well? And is he the same guy now that maybe you interviewed and wrote that book with a number of years ago?
Yeah, he really is. I was lucky enough. I have a sports publicity company that was under contract to Anheuser-Busch. So I was his PR guy for the entire era of the Budweiser Number 8 car. And so it gave me a front row seat for all the both the good and the bad, and just sort of the drama that swirled wherever he would go. But the Driver Number 8 book was written as a kind of a diary of sorts of his rookie year. And when we started working on it, we had no idea that suddenly he'd set a record for the quickest driver to win two races and one big at Texas in his first win. So things really just took off bigger and better than we could have imagined, only to be followed by such a tragedy then the following February when his father was killed. And so that the 2001 after his father was killed, that book is called In the Red, which is right, kind of a follow-up or sequel to Driver Number 8. But to answer your question directly, he is the same guy. He's always been very self-effacing, very bright, very thoughtful, always concerned about making sure everybody was taken care of, whether that was his crew or his team or, or his fans and sponsors. So I still saw a lot of that when he gave his retirement speech, that is still very much a part of him. And he's very much the same gentleman that I began working with way back when. I'm feeling old, like I said, but he's grown and matured, but he's still at heart the same guy that I work with for so many years.
Yeah, it's been a while, but you have had, and you mentioned it, great seats for all of that. And you knew leading up, just because of just the career that his father was in and was having and had. And just he's just a revered figure in racing that you knew there was going to be a little bit of that transference on the popularity side. But one of the things that I thought is that he's so completely different than his dad. His dad made, you know, the persona that he was out on the track was kind of the bad guy, right? The man in black. And Dale Jr. has been the most popular driver by being really, and you mentioned, you know, thoughtful and self-effacing and just a very, like, one of the real nice guys of the sport. So he did it his way. I mean, still popular, but so totally different than the way that his dad carried himself.
Oh, you're really spot on with that. And that was, again, I began working with him right before his full rookie season in what was then called Winston Cup. And it was something that he was very conscious of. He wanted to have his own personality, and he didn't want to do things only because his father did them, and which kind of an interesting thing. Again, I mentioned his first Cup race win was in Texas, and his father never won there at that track. It was relatively new at the time. And it was almost like he felt like the cheers for him there were justified because he had won somewhere his father hadn't. And he felt that they were really cheering for him versus the fact that he was the son of the guy in the black number three. So just that always fascinated me that he was really pleased to have fans cheer for him on what he perceived as being, you know, his own merit versus who his father was.
Yeah, outside of the kind of genetic legacy that he had, you know, for being, you know, the son of Dale Earnhardt, you know, he was, and you're right, Jade, because for the Busch Series, now the Xfinity Series, that second tier series, he was a two-time champion in that series, so a lot of great potential there. But your thoughts too, and you came out of the gate, and it was maybe better than people expected, certainly good, and he's had an amazing career, Daytona 500 wins, so many victories. He hasn't captured, you know, that season series yet, and you never know what could happen this year, especially with new stage racing and the point system. We're not sure how it's all going to shake out. But do you think that, you know, knowing him, he always seems kind of satisfied, a little separated from the sport, where he didn't seem too crazy about it. He was all, you know, the world was crazy for him, and he obviously took it very seriously at a very high level. But do you think he's going to have any kind of reservation stepping away, thinking he never really won that full championship?
I don't think that bothers him. There may have been a time, you know, earlier in his career where he felt that pressure. I know he really felt pressure to win the Daytona 500. You know, he had seen his dad. His dad didn't win till his, I think, 17th or 18th time right in the Daytona 500. And he saw the pressure that was on his father. So early in his career, that was a relief. Obviously, he would really want to win a championship, and that's always sort of the end goal. But just as he's matured, I don't think it weighs on him in the sense that I don't think he feels like his career is incomplete or that it lessens what he's been able to do. Obviously he wanted to win a title, but if he doesn't, I don't think it's going to you know, really hurt his legacy of what he was able to achieve.
And as much as now with social media and a lot of the ways that the drivers and in sports personalities or entertainers in general are able to interact with their public, with their fans, and you feel like you get to know them, I can't give a bigger endorsement to the listeners than to get driver number eight, get in the red, because it is that unique and individual kind of insight, that snapshot. You are back in time in those formative times that have led to so much of what he's done and become over the years. And those were crazy formative times. I remember interviewing Dale Jr. at the Brickyard 400, you know, in that first season. It was just a very unique place in time, and no one could have foreseen, I don't know, the success and adulation. You could say, like, hey, you know he's going to be popular, but he has done it, and like you said, Jade, he has done it his own way. So definitely get out there and get those two books from Jade Gerson. I wanted to talk to you because then, you know, you are not defined just by Dale, even though, you know, that is a big part and a big important part of your career, and it's a great luxury for us to be able to have you share that with us. But for Beast, you know, there's a whole other iconic event. The Indy 500 is a bucket list. I don't care what kind of sport you may be into. Everybody wants to get to and attend the Indy 500 at some point. And so talk a little bit about writing that book. Again, a historical perspective on it. But why should people get that, read that before this happens a little bit later on this month?
Well, in a general sense, the book Beast gives a history of the Indy 500 just to give such as a new fan a sense of the towering history and the things that have happened there. And it's also as much a spy or mystery novel as anything else. It's the true story of how Roger Penske and Ilmor Engineering, which was the engine building firm that Roger was a partner in, built a top secret engine to match the rules and kept it secret all the way until 2 weeks before the 1994 Indy 500 began. And it's really an amazing story of how they hid that and some of the things they did to send folks off the beaten path as far as discovering it. And it was an amazing engine. It's kind of considered the last great individual innovation at the Speedway. And unfortunately, after that was when the IndyCar series split into two categories, and it's still kind of recovering now. But right. It really is a book about the history of the 500 and capturing it at almost its peak. It's really when the 500 was at its highest level with sponsors and teams and names. So it has a lot of elements, but it's also great for a new fan to come in. And it is written about this top secret engine, but it's not written for engineers. It's written for people that you don't need a mechanical degree to understand the story and the people behind it. It's definitely written for folks that aren't experts at all in that.
That's one of the gifts that you have, too, is you make some of these things that can be very kind of inside baseball or very technical, you make them very approachable. And if you can build in, you know, a little mystery, a little intrigue, a little espionage, then I think you've got an impressive and exciting read.
Well, thank you. I couldn't say it better myself.
Thanks, Jade. Hold tight for a second. We're going to take a quick break, get some commercials, and when we come back, Jade Gers, just to let the listeners know, we're talking with Jade Gers, acclaimed author, historian, biographer for Dale Earnhardt Jr., and then an author for so many other great books in the racing world, but those do not necessarily define him. He is doing some cool stuff with Mazda, and we're going to hear about the future, what his thoughts are for Dale Earnhardt Jr. as well. So stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break. It's On the Road here with Dane on 720 WGN.
Hey, this is Alexander Rossi, Indy 500 champion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
I just want to stay in the sun where I find. I know it's hard sometimes.
720 WGN on the road with Dane here, Allstate Showcase Studio. Joey Gelman in the booth, and I am here on the line with us. We do have acclaimed author, to let the listeners know, Jade Gers. When it came to writing those initial books for Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s career, he's done that. He did the first one in Red, and then Driver Number 8. But it doesn't necessarily define him. He's doing a ton of stuff right now with Mazda. So Jade, welcome back to the show. And what's going on?
Well, it's a wide range of programs. Mazda has a great motorsports history around the world. They're still the only Asian company to have ever won overall at the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And here in North America, we have a great grassroots program where folks can take maybe an older Miata and go racing for very little money. We have a huge portion of business there. And then in the more professional ranks, we have what's called the Mazda Road to Indy, which in a sports context is very much the same as AAA, AA, and A ball in Major League Baseball. It's the way drivers, teams, and crew prepare and train and learn in order to reach the top of the IndyCar series. And then on the sports car side, we also race in the IMSA WeatherTech Series, which is the highest level of sports car racing in North America. Beautiful new cars called Daytona prototypes that are actually, the look of those were designed by the same designers that designed the latest Miata, the latest CX-5. So it really looks like a Mazda. So that's a short version of all the things we have going on. Never a dull moment, and it's always something different each weekend.
You see, you mentioned it, though, but it comes full circle. You're touching on all aspects of the motorsports world, whether it's NASCAR legends, whether it's legendary and iconic races in open wheel, whether it's some of those other series out there that may not get as much attention but are still exciting for those fans and I need a bigger audience, and then just how it translates down to the cars that we drive and enjoy on a daily basis. races. So, Jade, I know that we, on this show, we always like to talk about first cars. So for a guy that's had probably access to so many different vehicles, what was your first car? You know, was it something, you know, was it fun? Was it dangerous, or was it just kind of a junky car?
Well, I grew up, my father owned auto dealerships, so I had a little advantage. But my first one was actually a 1965 Chevy that my dad had kind of fixed up and restored. An unbelievably beautiful car, bench seats and all that. I put a cassette deck in it, and unfortunately, a classmate of mine goes by the name of Cheesy. Ran into me in the school parking lot and pretty much crushed it.
Oh, it's terrible.
65 Chevy, yeah. 65 Chevy was my first car and the first of many.
Wow, geez. And, you know, at this point here, WGN Radio, Cheesy has not lived it down yet.
Probably not. I don't know if he's listening, but anyway.
Well, Jade, it's been an honor. It's been an honor to have you on, and I know the listeners have enjoyed it as well. And so last thing for Dale Jr. is, do you have another book in you, do you think? And then what do you think he's going to do for the future? He's going to take a few. I know he wants to be a barbecue pit master. That's one of those things. Yes. Or do you think they'll find him in the broadcast booth? He's never been, like, maybe the most comfortable speaker, but the commercials that he does are very funny. He has a great sense of humor. What do you see?
Yeah, one of the great things about him is that he's always had a variety of interests. So he's not one of these guys that only lived to get in that race car. He's always had other interests, and I think that will definitely serve him well. I think the TV rumors are pretty heavy, pretty strong, and I think he would do a good job in that context. But he may surprise us. Who knows what he's going to get into in the coming years.
Well, here to share so many of the stories that he did in the past, and of course with Mazda currently and in the future, the one and only Jade Gerst. So, Jade, thanks for all you're doing. And, Jade, give out the information as far as maybe the website where people can keep up with your social media. I know you're pretty active there, and where people can get their hands on some of these books.
Yeah, social media is, I do a lot with Twitter with Mazda Racing. Then also on Twitter, my personal account is just under my name, Jade Gerst. The best bet to find all of my books is just Amazon. You can search by the title, or you can search by my name. And the Dale Jr. books, I wrote a book with Darrell Waltrip, and then the Indy 500 book called Beast. It's going to be your best bet for all of them, and check them out.
Yep, he's one of the best in the business, and get out there, get those books, and read them, and enjoy. Jade, thanks for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Always happy to do it, and hope everybody enjoyed it. Hey everyone, this is Will Power, IndyCar driver, and you are on the road today on WGN.
720 WGN on the road with Dane here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue and on the line, which is one of the top drivers in Indy racing with 44 career poles, 29 career wins, and the 2014 Verizon IndyCar Championship, the racing pride of Toowoomba, Australia. Looking forward to so many great events coming up as we head towards the 101st running of the Indy 500. The one and only Will Power, welcome to WGN.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, looking at some of the stuff, and a successful driver, one of the very few drivers to win races in each one of the seasons over the last, let's say, 10 years or so, and looking towards some great success coming up this year as well. But looking at the bio and talking with Jessica a little bit, your first paycheck, the first thing that you ever bought was drums. And so music has always been a huge influence in your life, too. But with your parents, grandparents, all in racing, was it a no-brainer you'd be a driver, or could you be on tour with a band right now?
Yeah, I kind of sometimes wish I'd do music more, but I love racing. I mean, when I was a kid, I loved racing so much, so it was really a childhood dream to be exactly where I am now. So, you know, but I still play, I play the drums. Not that well, but I play them.
Oh, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the program as well. But the unique perspective that you have, of course, racing worldwide, it is a phenomenon here, especially in Indy and IndyCar. And with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you have one of these kind of amazing, legendary, beloved locations to do that. In Australia, was racing, IndyCar racing, the Indy 500, was it something that you guys, you know, that sports fans down there, down under, paid attention to?
Yes, I do think so. IndyCar did have a race in Australia on the Gold Coast from, you know, I think it was first race might have been 1991,
and they stopped going there after 2008. So IndyCar was well known in Australia. And, you know, I remember the Indy 500 growing up as a kid. You know, I was a big Formula One fan, but I remember when Nelson Piquet went to race there, Nigel Mansell. So, you know, I was, as a kid, I was aware of the Indy 500.
So you're getting to live your dreams now, and it's very few people that actually get to say to themselves that this is exactly where they would hope to be in their career. And so share a little bit about that, just as far as the Motor Speedway for those people. You know, we've talked with a number of drivers, obviously, on this show, and here in the Midwest, a lot of people from the Chicagoland area make that pilgrimage down to see the 500. But, you know, we've got listeners all around the country, all around the world. So what is it like as a driver the first time that you're there racing at Indy?
Yeah, I have to say the first time for me was I was very new to ovals, and so it was pretty daunting because it's so fast. But what amazed me was the amount of media coverage that it got over the month, and, you know, just, you know, how big every event was, like qualifying and carb day. And race day just blew me away with the amount of people. It was just an atmosphere that I'd never felt before when you walk out of Gasoline Alley on race day, and just to a sea of people, it's an amount of people I've never seen in one place before. So it was, I was never aware of how big of a deal it was until I participated for the first time there in 2008. And then it kind of grows on you, and you really, really feel the urge to want to execute and win the race.
Right, exactly. Feel the urge to go out there and make some things happen. Well, you are in some of the best and most capable hands in racing for Team Penske when we come up to the 101st running of the Indianapolis 500. You mentioned the media coverage, and people from all around the world will be watching, and I'm going to wish you the best of luck when that happens. But this is a big process. So in Indianapolis, you know, leading up to the race, there are so many other events coming up. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the Grand Prix. That's going to be on the 12th and 13th. And, of course, you got Rev Indy. That's coming up early part of the month. So for the Grand Prix, talk a little bit about what happens there for that at Indianapolis.
Yeah, the Grand Prix is just a really good kickoff for the month. You know, that started in, I think the first year they had that was 2014, I would say. And it's been really successful. It's a really cool track, I have to say. We do actually use half of the speedway. You get a really long straight, it creates great racing. And it's one of the smoothest, nicest European style circuits that we run on.
And then coming up to Rev Indy, I heard through the grapevine that you mentioned you may not be the greatest drummer out there, but you certainly have a passion for playing, and that you're going to actually get to play. So people are going to be able to enjoy you on the track and see all the success in your chosen field, but then also one of your passions, drumming. You're going to be on stage. Now, who are you going to be drumming with? You're going to be, is it Steve Miller or the Bare Naked Ladies, or do you have another band you'll be working with?
I actually don't know the name of the band. They gave me, IndyCar gave me a couple of songs to learn a while ago, and I've kind of, don't know how, you know, I've learned them. I'm probably not, we've been so busy racing, haven't learned them quite well enough yet, but I mean, I'm just going to have to give it my best shot and have fun and enjoy it. Yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Oh, you'll be great. Now, when you think about Australia, great and iconic bands, what do you got? Like AC/DC and INXS. But who were the drummers as you were growing up and that you either really appreciated their playing or tried to emulate? Were you like a Tommy Lee, Motley Crue guy with Neil Peart with Rush? Were you old school Led Zeppelin with John Bonham? I mean, who were some of your favorite? Dave Grohl, maybe, you know, with Nirvana. Who were your favorite drummers?
Yeah, definitely Dave Grohl, Travis Barker, Jimmy Chamberlain from Smashing Pumpkins. I mean, yeah, but there's some awesome old school drummers like Buddy Rich.
Oh, yeah.
It's just phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, all those guys just be amazing to be able to play in one of those bands. It'd be such a cool experience. But yeah, I have really never played in a band. It's kind of listened to my iPod to play along, so it'll be cool when I actually get to.
Yeah, that'll be some exciting stuff. And for the listeners that have not been to the Indianapolis 500, and Will, you kind of mentioned it, it's just this big, huge spectacle. It's a bucket list event no matter what sport anybody may be into. It's something to definitely attend. And it draws in the range of celebrities like you have never seen. I have met presidents of the United States, David Letterman, people that are like musicians, like top rock stars, people on hit TV shows, movie actors. I mean, there's so many of those. And as they get a chance to see some of their idols, you know, some race car drivers that they love, and yourself is included in that. Like at the Indy 500, who's the coolest person you ever met? Have you ever met any of your drumming idols or music idols or people that you appreciated?
I was actually a big fan of Ice-T.
You know, Ice-T. Nice.
And a boy, like my friend Marco Andretti, another driver, his friend also, he always hangs out with Ice-T. And Ice-T and Coco were there. And I went up just before the race, kind of nervous for the race, not nervous to meet him. I was just nervous for the race. And I saw him. I usually don't talk to anyone just before the race. So I went up, shook his hand, said, I'm a big fan. And he kind of said, like, as I walked away, the voice was like, who's that? I think he was. And then someone said, oh, that's Will Power. He said, oh, Will Power. And he came over and said, oh, Will Power, yeah, you know, I'm a big fan. Like, he watches the race, because he watches all the races.
Nice.
So he knew who I was. I couldn't believe it, because he's watching Marco Andretti, obviously. And so that was cool. I had a chance to go to dinner with him in New York, but I'm so focused in the month, because Marco said, oh, why don't you come out to dinner in New York here? A couple of us going out, meeting with IT. And I was like, damn, man, no, I've got to go to sleep. Cause, you know, sleep's important for the month of May, so I missed out. I was really disappointed.
Oh, come on, Will, you could sleep anytime. You could only have dinner with Ice-T now and then.
I know. I told Marco, man, you got to line that up again, please.
That's great. Well, see, here's what you got to do, Will, is you got to race more without a helmet on. And I'm not saying for safety purposes. Obviously, that would be a bad idea. But then, you know, Ice-T would be able to see. Everyone would know exactly who you look like because, you know, you've got the helmet on. And maybe they might not know. Have you seen his new commercial where he's it's like a lemonade stand for like a little girl?
Yeah.
He's like, it's lemonade.
Let's say, what's wrong with these people? Lemonade.
Okay. Yeah. So here's the thing. And for the fans, they're going to know that you are calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina. And I know in the stock car series, you see it occasionally go one way or the other, where people are racing stock cars, racing open wheel. You know, there's been a number of drivers that have moved back and forth. You're right there in the heart of the world of NASCAR. Any thought of doing some NASCAR driving at some point, maybe as just like a hobby, or maybe at some point in your career?
I mean, definitely keep a close eye on all that. Just a matter of having the right situation. I'd love to have a go. Man, it looks like fantastic racing, you know, on the ovals. But, just focused on IndyCar right now. And, you know, see what happens in the future.
Well, people are going to be focused on IndyCar for the entire month of May. So many things happening, so many things that you're going to be involved with as well. Excited to have you in on another one of those. Looking for maybe the 45th pole. Right, coming up for the Indianapolis 500, the 101st running of that race. So, Will, for those people who want to keep up with you, catch up on your social media, see all the things that you're doing, certainly be able to see and share those photographs of you at dinner with Ice-T someday. Do you have like an Instagram or Twitter that people can follow?
Yes, my Twitter is at 12 Will Power. My Instagram is at 12 Will Power. Yes, keep up, put some videos up.
He is the Penske driver, Will Power, at 12 Will Power is the social media for him. You're going to see him a bunch of times, the 12th, the 13th for the Grand Prix there at Indianapolis. You'll see him on stage drumming at Rev Indy. We're going to be excited to see who he's going to be drumming with. And for this year, at least, he'll be out there in the Verizon IndyCar Series racing until he decides to go on tour with the Foo Fighters or something like that in the near future and experience his passion for drumming. So, Will, thanks so much for what you're doing. Good luck out there on the track and everything else. And thanks for being on the show today.
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Will Power, lemonade. You got to love lemonade. Stay tuned. As soon as we get back from this break, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk with, we'll have Joe Mantegna on. You think of him as, you know, certainly Chicago royalty, an iconic personality. You know, he's been in so many different things, from theater to movies to, of course, his connection with the Cubs. But he also, as all of us have, has had a first car. We're going to talk first cars with Joe. When we come back right now, we're going to take a break. It's On the Road with Dane, 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Joe Mantegna, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Baby, don't you wanna go? Come on.
720 WGN on the road with Dane here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and in the presence of Chicago royalty with us, a star of stage and screen, of course, Godfather 3, Criminal Minds, the huge hit, and immortalized at the corner of Hudson and Armitage with his own street sign, the one and only Joe Mantegna. Welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you.
So, Joe, on this show, we talk about, you know, some of the family road trips that, that you may make from Cicero to wherever. Did you ever do any of that with the family? Did you all pile into the family truckster and head to maybe the Dells or something?
A big trip was us was Holland, Michigan. You know, it'd be like you go to Holland, Michigan, you get the little Dutch shoes, or maybe go to Lake Geneva. That was about it. And the one big road trip we took was to California. And I remember 1957 because my dad's brother moved out there. And so that was the one, and we drove. We did the whole Route 66, and then we saw all this stuff and came back, I think, Route 30. And that, it's funny how you remember how important a road trip is, because that's really the only one I ever took with my family. And I remember it vividly because, you know, we took like 1 week to get there. We stayed in California for a week, took a week to get back. And I remember so much of it.
People talk about trying to get families together in order to sit down and have a meal and talk. But when you're kind of confined, sequestered, if you will, in a car.
Especially in a 56 Chevy with no air conditioning going through the desert. Exactly. But it was great. And I remember Yellowstone National Park and the Petrified Forest and the Grand Canyon.
See?
All those places. It was great.
With your schedule, it's tough to get back here to Chicago on a regular basis, much less anywhere with so many people looking for what it is that you do. But one of the things that we do on this show on a regular basis, and whether it's, you know, notables from the world of sports or just average everyday Chicagoans, we'll talk about what was your first car. And sometimes it's something like really cool that you saved up for. Sometimes it's something embarrassing that your uncle lent for you. Sometimes it's something else. But for you.
Well, you know, it's almost a little combo of both in the sense that my very first car, I was 19 years old, I remember. And my dad, we had this 56 Chevy, the same one we drove out to California. By now it was like it was a 56. So it was like 1967 or something. So it was like 11 years old. The Chicago weathers had knocked the hell out of it. It was all a rust bucket. My dad gave it to me. He said, here, son, here's your car. Like, oh, great.
You need to get around.
I kept it for about 6 hours because what I did is I was a student at Morton Junior College. I put a sign up in a student union saying I have a car for sale. And I sold it for like $95 to somebody because I had seen this 1947 Buick that was for sale for $225 right near where I lived in Cicero. And I thought this would make a great car for the band because we can, you know, we'd all pull up in this big old Buick. It was 20 years old then.
Then.
So I sold the car in one day that my dad gave me. So it really wasn't kind of my first car. I had it for 6-7 hours. Bought the Buick. That's the first car I ever paid for. I bought this Buick. I have that car today.
Amazing.
Because I drove it for years. I got cast in the play Hair. I drove it right up when I was doing the play Hair in 1969. Then I realized I can't keep this car up in the winter here in Chicago. I put it in my friend's barn. My dear friend Alan Barkus, who was a musician here in Chicago, he lived in LaPorte, Indiana. I put it in his barn. It sat there for about 30 years. Just, you know, we forgot about it. It was like, I said, someday, Alan, maybe I'll fix this car up. Sure, Joe, leave it here. I don't
need it. Now, Joe, every once in a while, do you check in every couple of years to make sure he hadn't, like, I sold that barn?
I didn't check anything. No, what happened is he called me and says, I'm moving.
You need to get
What should I do with the car? And I'm saying, the car? The car is still there? Oh, yeah. And it had mice living in it. It was all. So anyway, he threw it on a flatbed, sent it to California. My career had finally, over these years, had now done fairly well. I thought, you know, I owe it to the car. You know, I owe it to this, my first car. It's been there in that barn all these years. Let's fix it up. And I did. And I had the late George Barris, the car guy. He worked on it.
Wow.
I had different people work on it. This guy, Les Peoples, who was a well-known restorer out there. The Buick Collectors Club. They were so glad to hear from me again. I joined the Buick Collectors Club in 1967.
Are you serious?
Did you have to renew
your membership?
My membership. I called them. I said, by any chance, you guys keep records of going back? And they looked it up. They says, oh, my God, you're one of the first, like, 6,000 members. You're like royalty.
Nice.
And I dropped out of the club for, like, 30-something years. So I'm a member again. They did a cover story on my car when I restored it. told the whole story. And I put it in shows. It's won, like, no first places, but it's won a couple of second and third places in shows.
Joe, I know that you know that you're blessed, whether it's the career, whether it's the family, whether it's just whether it's the Cubs, right, or whether it's Chicago. Yeah. You know, you have a lot. But there are so many. It's almost invariably when we interview people, they look back. And I don't care if it was an 85 Corolla. People will look back and say, I wish I had that car back. And
I know.
For you to have it, and we'll put a picture up of the 47 Buick up on the website as well. I mean, it is an absolute beautiful car. So it's one of those things, not just nostalgia for what it meant to you, it's an amazing vehicle.
No, and I have, like I say, I have pictures from both before and after. I have a picture of me with the band standing in front of the car when it was black, stock, all that. And then I turned it into a California car. I thought, you know what? I'm not going to drive a car with cloth seats and black and in 90-degree heat. So we decided to, I put it, you know, tucked in pleated leather upholstery. We painted it. My wife came up with the idea of maybe like a sand beige color. And it all worked out. I think it's like the two versions of the same car, and before and after.
As you have been blessed, that car has been blessed as well. The 1947 Buick. Well, you'll be driving it, as so many people will be, from now until eternity, past Hudson and Armitage, for Joe Mantegna, for your new street. So thanks so much for what you're doing. Great to have you here in Chicago, and thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, this is Wes Henderson with Angels Envy, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN, on the road with Dane, and here live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and one of those bucket list road trips. I don't care what sport you're into. You always want to make that pilgrimage at least once in your life down to the Kentucky Derby. Of course, our next guest is there on a regular basis as the ambassador, and as the world focuses on Louisville, what makes it special, unique, and delicious. On the line with us, we have one of the most active, certainly the most acclaimed and popular personalities in the spirit world. He is the co-founder and visionary driving force behind the amazing Angels Envy. It's the one and only Wes Henderson. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane, you're very kind. And as always, my friend, it's always, always good to talk with you. And I'm happy to be on the air with you.
Well, it's great. It's great to have you. People enjoy, you know, what you have created in the spirits world, that physical embodiment of all of that work, that legacy, your family. You know, they see it on the shelves. They enjoy it. It is one of those spirits that I know you do a number of different events. So when I mentioned active, you were all over the place, kind of sharing and introducing different versions of the spirit, different ways to enjoy it to those people. But it's got to feel good because I'm telling you, this is absolutely the 100% honest truth, is anytime I mention Angels Envy to anyone, they absolutely light up. It isn't as though they're just like, oh, yeah, that's good, or oh, I heard that was good. People are just so excited about what you're doing.
That's nice. And, you know, I tell you what, it goes a long way to talk about, you know, the wonderful people that I have that work for the brand, and, you know, the acceptance that we have out in the, you know, in the community and our consumers, and, you know, they've just kind of lifted us up and carried us to this really special place. So it's always good to hear that. And, you know, we just have some special, you know, some special relationships with our consumers, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah. Well, people are excited about what's going on. You are traveling. You're on the road all over the world on a regular basis doing these events. But coming up, it's a home game, right? It's a home game where the world is coming to you. So give the listeners a little kind of snapshot and insight into the excitement that is, you know, Louisville during Kentucky Derby.
You know, years ago, it started out as Derby Week. You know, you'd have a week of activities, and now it's almost Derby month and a half. We started off, you know, with Thunder Over Louisville, which the Zambelli Family Fireworks Company puts on that show. It's the largest continuous annual fireworks show in the country. It's just amazing, you know, half an hour of incredible fireworks. So that's the kickoff of the Derby Week Festival, or the Derby Festival, rather. The events now all the way through Derby, and parties and lunches and brunches and everything like that, all leading up to the big day, which is always the first Saturday in May.
People view it obviously all around the world, but I'm not sure what those numbers are. But how big of an event is it? You know, the Super Bowl holds maybe, and I know there's events and parties and everything leading up to it. It's something to sort of compare it to, maybe 70,000. But I know it is one of those iconic sports venues, Churchill Downs. How big is it? How many people can attend?
I mean, I know a couple of years ago, or actually last year, 167,000 people attended the Derby, which was just under the record, which I think was somewhere near 170. So that's a lot of people in an area that you would not think that you could fit that many people. But Churchill Downs does a wonderful job. They do it comfortably. They know how to entertain. They know how to, you know, to bring people in quickly and get people out quickly. So it doesn't seem like you've got that many people in one spot at one time.
I know that it does. It isn't just fans of horse racing that attend. It is one of those events that brings in kind of celebrities and notable people from whether it's the business community, entertainment, movies, sports. They all attend, and it's a great opportunity for you to share Angel's Envy with them at some of the different receptions and different places. But for you, Wes, you know, because you're a star in the spirits world when we go out with you, whether it's at South Beach or some other events, you know, people come up and they love to spend time with you. But for you, as like the celebrities that are there, who's some of the more interesting people you've run into at the Derby?
You know, it's our hometown, and everybody loves bourbon, so it's fun for me to meet people at the Derby. I meet all kinds of people. On the celebrity side, I think probably one of the most interesting people I've met is John Goodman, one of the most gracious, kindest, nicest guys I've ever met. Every year I've got a thing with a friend of mine, a guy named Wanya Morris, who's in Boys to Men, and we do shots of Angel's Envy at the track and visit with those guys. And last year we had the Patriots and some of the Green Bay Packers drinking Angel's Envy with us, drinking shots of Angel's Envy.
That's
so
insane.
You know, just whoever's around and you know, whoever likes bourbon, and you know, we'll make it happen together. It's a great day.
Whoever likes bourbon, come on, that's you know, everybody likes bourbon. So talk a little bit about this. You know, people are going to be enjoying, you know, all that stuff during the Derby, but you know, it's on shelves all around America, maybe even all around the world. And I know that you have not let your efforts just be defined by Angel's Envy. Like, it's, you know, you've been kind of expanding that portfolio, right? You've got some exciting new things coming up or that are in the works on the spirit side in other areas.
So the big thing right now that we've concentrated on is we opened our new distillery in downtown Louisville. It is really a show place. We had a review for the distillery the other day that called it a cathedral of bourbon.
Nice.
And I know it was really, and every time I walk into that building, Dane, I get this feeling of history. The building was built in 1902, and we've restored it, and we're making bourbon. We're making Angel's Envy, as well as working on innovations related to Angel's Envy. And, you know, I have this huge distillery that's really my own little sandbox that I can play around with anything I want to. And it's been a lot of fun. And some difficulty also just deciding which rabbit hole to go down. So we've decided just to have simultaneous, you know, products happening or innovations happening, and, you know, things that we may or may not ever make the light of day, but things that, you know, visitors can see. And, you know, we want to make it a show place, a nice, comfortable, home-like show place.
Well, give some information on that. So that's the kind of thing that people can see, certainly leading up to the Kentucky Derby, but all year long, you know, as people either pass through Louisville, visit Louisville, or enjoy some of the other things that are going on. Certainly bourbon fans, you know, make that pilgrimage on a regular basis all year. So is there for the website, and what kind of things people can experience if they visit you there?
Sure. You go to angelsenvy.com, where they'll talk about the distillery, and you can make a reservation online. Well, you do have to make a reservation. It's on Main Street in downtown Louisville, right across from the AAA ballpark for the Cincinnati Reds, if it's okay if I say that name on the air there in Chicago.
It's okay.
I'm a long-suffering Cincinnati Reds fan, so, you know, it's nice for me, although, trust me, we're no threat to you guys.
No.
But if you can stand it long enough to come across the street from the Reds AAA ballpark, we're right there. And I kid, because they've got a great place there, man. They built probably one of the best minor league ballparks in the country. If you're a baseball fan, I don't care what denomination you are, it's a great place to go. So we're across the street, and you know, come and see us and make a reservation online, and hopefully I'd be there to host you personally.
Yeah, so much history, of course. Baseball, who doesn't love baseball? America's pastime. Louisville Slugger right there, the Kentucky Derby right there, and then Angel's Envy, the cathedral of bourbon, and so much bourbon history happening there as well. And so Wes, what else, you know, other than the Kentucky Derby, all the people could be able to enjoy you there on a regular basis. They'll enjoy your efforts by getting Angel Envy at their local purveyor of fine spirits. But do you have any other events? Like, are you traveling other places around the world people would want to hear about?
I'm trying to get another trip to Chicago. I was in Naperville a couple of weeks ago, and trying to make my way back. Did an event at Benny's downtown, an event at Benny's in Naperville. But I'm due to come back. That's my city, man. I'm ready to come back and visit. So just keep asking for me and I'll come.
Yeah, well, let's put the bat signal out right now, the bourbon bat signal for Wes Henderson, because this is a great food town, and our door is always open. There's always a seat at the table and a place at the bar for Wes Henderson. So angelsenvy.com is the website. You can find out all about the events that are coming up, some of the different spirits, the efforts, the things happening, and your opportunity to visit that cathedral of bourbon, high praise and well-deserved down there in Louisville. So, Wes, thanks so much for what you're doing, and thanks for being on WGN today.
Thanks, brother. Every time. Love visiting, and we'll talk again soon. Give me fuel, give me fire, give
me that which I desire. Hey, this is Kevin Harvick, driver of the number 4 Jimmy John's Ford Fusion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
WGN WGN on the road with Dane here, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. And we've talked a little bit of racing. We've talked a little bit of travel, talked a little bit of food, talked a little bit of bucket list events. And our last guest was Wes Henderson from Angels Envy Bourbon, so identified with Louisville as it is. And of course, the Kentucky Derby as well. And so I wanted to necessarily talk, as far as anybody that's been to the Kentucky Derby. Joey's been monitoring the weather. He is our own personal Tom Skilling right now, monitoring what it is that they're doing. And I guess during, just as though they'll show replays or highlights from other things or kind of ancillary activities going on. They'll show that when there's a rain delay for the Cubs. And I guess they had sort of the mint julep situation happening there, where they're showing like how to make the perfect mint julep. It's a beverage that's so identified with the event. And Joey, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you've done. I know that you are a tailgate aficionado, and I know that for the Kentucky Derby, and you know, it's legendary tailgating for racing. People tailgate a couple days before and you heard Wes talk about it a little bit for Kentucky Derby. I think it's weeks that they tailgate, certainly the few days before, but they've got the mint julep there. Have you ever had a mint julep? Do you know how to make one? You enjoy a mint julep now and then?
I don't think I've ever had one, nor know how to make one, so that may be a new adventure I have to take. It sounds good.
And have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby? Now, me personally, and I mentioned it to you off the air, we're waiting on Chef Aaron May. Hopefully, it's a long day. He was there doing the tailgate, the ultimate Kentucky Derby tailgate with our good friend Guy Fieri last night. That went until 3 a.m. He had called in an hour early, and then that hour may have provided him with, you know, enough time to maybe get sleepy or tired, who knows. But so have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby? You haven't been to it?
I have not. I think it'd be cool to go to. It's something in the sports world that I'm just not as familiar with. And so I think it'd be really cool. I mean, I watch it every year, but I think it'd be really cool to be in that environment and see it live, for sure.
312-981-7200 for those people that have done it. And I think, you know, not everybody is into horse racing. It is a popular, it's a popular sport. Certainly the Kentucky Derby is a huge, huge, huge event. But I think a lot of the people that go, they just go because it is it's one of those fun things to kind of do. It's an experience kind of a little bit different than maybe the Indy 500 or the Super Bowl, because it comes with some dress regulations, right? You're supposed, if you're a lady, you're supposed to wear a giant hat. Is that the truth, right?
Yeah.
And if you're a guy, you're supposed to wear some kind of a pastel suit. So that's good, too. So people are enjoying that. Would you be open to doing that?
I think so. I think it's a different class of a sport that I have to get a little more spiffy for than my normal, you know, jersey. But I think it'd be fun to go to. It's an overall experience that's really, really different. I mean, it's not only because the sport itself, if you think about it, the event is, I mean, besides the all-day races, the Derby itself is, what, 2 minutes running?
That's what they call it, the fastest.
Right.
2 minutes in sports.
Right, versus like a football game where you're there for 4 hours. So it's almost like the pomp and circumstance around it would be really fascinating to be a part of, before and after.
You wonder if you'd be disappointed if you're too busy pomp and circumstancing and you ended up missing the entire thing. But I know there's a lot of lead up. I saw on one of the monitors, Harry Connick Jr. is getting ready to, he does the national anthem for that. They've got some concerts and some other things. So they make it into an all day thing, which was really genius, right?
Oh,
they take this 2 minutes and turn it into something that's like a really, really big deal that happens over the course of time. We're going to look at some of the horses that are going on right there. And looking at Lee, Thunder, Snow, Fast and Accurate, Untrapped, Always Dreaming, State of Honor, Gervin, Hence. I mean, I'm trying to see if there's any kind of names that jump out at you. Battle of Midway, of course, Midway Airport. Because I think people look for, something that they can sort of connect with All right. So we are going to go to him. We do have him. We've caught him. We've got him on the line. One and only chef Aaron May. Welcome to WGN, Aaron.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, chef. You know, sorry, I know with the time zones it's a little bit different, but and I know, and I explained it to the listeners, you know, you were there tasked with entertaining people in a big way at the ultimate launch party. That went till 3 a.m. How did that go?
Went till a little past 3 a.m., if we're being honest with each other. it was amazing. I mean, what a great time. Such a good event. StubHub and Bullseye pulled out all the stops. I mean, we had an unbelievable time last night.
Well, and to let the listeners know, and I think I mentioned a little bit, our good mutual friend Guy Fieri was there kind of headlining it. But you had music, and then you had a lot of the food that you were bringing to it as well. So talk a little bit about the environment. The people at Bullseye do it right.
The people at Bullseye always do it right. We, Guy and I have done the Super Bowl with them, the Masters with them. This is the first year of the Derby launch party. And we had, you know, Guy has a restaurant right across the street on 4th Street Live. We were up on the second level at 4th Street Live. Unbelievable space. Looking down on Dashboard Confessional playing. We had DJ Iree spinning. We had food from Guy's restaurant, Guy Fieri's Smokehouse. I did some food. We had all the favorites. We had a Kentucky Derby-inspired bread pudding, like a mint julep bread pudding.
Nice.
We had all the barbecue from the restaurant. We did some Asian snack food. I did a midnight menu of chicken and waffles. I mean, we had food, drink, fun, girls in big hats, dresses. I mean, it was Derby at its finest.
Okay, so you're there. And for some of these iconic events, you know, the Masters, the Super Bowl, they are the kind of thing that most people can only, like, hope to attend. But you, as a guy who's always doing it, where does Kentucky Derby, where does it kind of rate as far, and then describe the vibe of the place right now?
You know, I'm standing outside gate 3 at Churchill Downs right now talking to you, getting ready to go in. And, I mean, the Derby is totally different than all these other big events because really everybody's here to party, right? The Super Bowl, you're in a room full of Patriots fans or Seahawks fans or Steelers fans or whoever your team is, right? And some people are going to go home and have the best day of their year, and some people are going to go home miserable, right? But they're all fans. The Masters, you got a bunch of guys coming to root for Sergio or coming to root for Lesty or rooting for Rory. You get a lot of international guys. The Derby, nobody really is here backing a horse, right? Everybody's here to have a good time. You don't see, you know, people aren't in, like, secretariat jerseys and wearing jockey silks. They just want to come party and have a good time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's another marketing idea. The secretariat jerseys, I think, would sell very well. But, you know, you can support your horse. Could let the listeners know we're talking with the one and only Chef Aaron May down there on site, hand on the pulse of everything going on at the Derby. Do you have a horse that you've picked for today?
Yeah, not really. I haven't even looked at a racing form yet. I'm just here to take it all in.
See, that's it. All right. So before we let you go, give the information. People know that they can see at some of these great events and, of course, with Bullseye. But if you want to give out your social media where people can catch up with all your adventures, let them know.
Yeah, you know, BullseyeEventGroup.com is a great place to catch up on all the events. Guy's there a lot of the time. I'm always there. We're always bringing in different chefs. And then, you know, I'm on Instagram. It's @Aaron_May. And I try and post as much as I can to keep people in the loop so they can come eat some good food and have a party with us.
Last second weather report. Is it raining right now? Is the thing going to go off on time?
The rain just let up about 25 seconds ago, and I see blue skies and sunshine. I'm cautiously optimistic this is going to hold out.
That's the forecast, cautiously optimistic. Thanks, Chef Aaron May. Thanks for calling in and giving us the vibe down there at the Derby. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day.